Listen, I've never had any problem expressing my opinions, but what we're doing here is bigger than that. These are conversations that need to be had in an unfiltered way. Drag racing's all I've ever done. It's all I care to do. I respect the history, I appreciate how far we've come, but I want more for this sport, and I'll fight for it. It's uncut, it's unfiltered, this is the show of shows. The biggest names in drag racing. No holds barred. This is the great American motorsport, drag racing. Prove me wrong, I'll wait. Hey gang, Wes Buck here, Drag Illustrated Magazine, checking in. It is Wednesday, November 22nd, 2023. Hope you're doing well. Remember, follow along with the conversation, be a part of the conversation, dive into the comments, click like, click share, click subscribe. If you're new here to the Drag Illustrated YouTube channel, definitely hit that subscribe button, hit the little bell. Make sure you get a notification anytime we create some new content. We've got another barn burner of a show. So much going on. It feels like I have all these friends and family that are like, hey, man, I guess the season's kind of winding down. It's kind of your chill time. No, this is like the busiest time of year for so many people in our industry. We're staring down the barrel, of course, of the 2023 Performance Racing Industry Trade Show coming up in downtown Indianapolis. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We got some fun stuff happening around the party. Tables sold out. This place is going to be lit. Unbelievable, actually. But we also are going to be joined here in just a few short moments by the one, the only Tyler Crosnow of the PDRA, who announced their 2024 schedule. A couple of new additions on there. Exciting. A whole lot of fun to talk about. All sorts of stuff going on within the PDRA. The Million Dollar Tour. I want to talk about that. I don't know that these guys often get the credit they deserve in this community for the amount of money and energy and effort that they put into their series. So I'm excited to talk to Tyler. And of course, we're still kind of in the hangover of a championships decided at the NHRA finals. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Look forward to the future. Got the Snowbirds coming up down at Bradenton Motorsports Park. Huge news from Donald Long, who we're going to check in with as well. Pretty excited about this. 100,000 to win, unlimited door slammer event, essentially, along with 100,000 to win Run for the Record, essentially a long ball hitting contest that I'm sure will get a lot of interest out here in this space right now. But anyways, let's dive into this thing. JT, what's going on, man? We're down Mike again, 2 weeks in a row. He's bailed on us. Have you talked to this guy? What's going on?
I wonder what's wrong with him.
We need to do some investigation here because, I mean, 2 weeks in a row, like his head's going to start to shrink.
He's probably on
his clothes are going to fit.
He's probably on a beach somewhere. Just telling us he's sick. You know,
Last week he was super sick with the flu or food poisoning. Wasn't sure what it is. This week he's got some sort of sinus infection. Can hardly speak. Can hardly breathe. So I don't know how we'll
life's
carry
good for
on
Lisa right
him.
Now. Then right?
Oh yeah, I think she just left him. I think she's like, well, I'm gonna go to the store. I'm gonna get out of the office if you're gonna be home all day. But no, it's we miss Mike and we're excited to have him back. Did you see that he's been announced as a celebrity judge at the Burnouts event that's being put on by Nate Prater out at the House of Hooks?
I did. That's awesome, right?
I told him, I said, man, you're being mentioned in the same breath as Santa Claus. Did you see that? Like they had a graphic made for Santa.
Yep.
A graphic made for Mike Carpenter. And I said, dude, you're in rare air. Like your name's on the sign alongside Santa Claus.
I commented on it that, that's the perfect choice for a judge because he is constantly judging everybody.
Oh, poor Mike. No, anyways, tons of stuff to talk to. So let's get right into it. We got Tyler Crosnow in the green room. Tyler, what's up, dude? You doing well?
What's up, guys? How are y'all?
Swinging and ducking, brother. Swinging and ducking, man. So let's talk about the schedule because this is something that it seems like it gets earlier and earlier and earlier. The expectation of getting schedule. Why don't you just? I know what. Yeah. Not really.
Like the last
PRI,
of the party with a schedule, and I'm like, damn. I thought I was doing.
PRI used to be the drop dead, right? Like you had to have your schedule out by PRI, and now you've got to have it out before PRI, and it's just getting close. And before we know it, it's going to be 4th of July, and people are going to be expecting to hear what their plans are for the next year.
Exactly.
How big of a challenge is putting the schedule together? Like for those like. I think that when you think about the number of races that are going on, and here's a moment to just like tip our collective cap to the racing community, because this has kind of been the story of 2023 here on this show, is there's so much racing going on that it's hard. I mean, we feel pressure every single week because we can't, you can't talk. We'd have to do a 6-hour show minimum to come close to covering everything that's happening in drag racing at any given moment. I mean, it's how much of a challenge is that? Like, what's that process look like? Fortunately, you've got a 10-year track record and there's some established things with the PDRA, certain events happening a certain time of the year. But what's that look like for you?
It's difficult. I'm not going to lie. You know, like you just said, the majority of the events are well seasoned. They kind of have their spot. You know, we've always started at Gallant. Now we've moved around a couple of times with the Virginia race. You know, we've kind of started to make it a staple that you go to Norwalk on Memorial Day weekend, and, you know, and it started to kind of, you know, kind of drive home. Hey, look, this is the schedule. This is where we're going. Like you just said, this year we've had to shake things up just a little bit with one race, with a new racetrack coming in. And we're looking forward to going to a new place. And it's, I mean, heck, we're going to Bristol. I mean, what else can you say? It's Bristol. Like, it's going to be an awesome time to take our talents there. And I can't wait to do it.
Take your talents to South Beach.
Yeah, we're going to take our talents to Thunder Valley.
Take our talents to Thunder Valley. JT, August 22nd through 24th, I think you and I are headed to Bristol, Tennessee, dude. For those you know, don't follow along super close with this, the PDRA start their season, as always, like Tyler was saying, at Gallant Motorsports Park, go straight to Virginia a couple weeks later. Then to Norwalk, which is always a barn burner, the North-South Shootout, Maryland International Raceway, go back to US 131 in the summer, and then take it take the PDRA talents to Bristol Dragway. How cool! I mean, that's a track that just has such a is such a big part of door slammer drag racing history. I mean, they've got a grandstand named after Ricky Smith. Like, anytime you go to a place and they're like naming shit after Tricky Ricky, it's my kind of place. You got to be there.
And that's something that we all have kind of, we've said it for years. Like, we need to be at Bristol. We need to be at Bristol. And it's not even because it's a facility, but when you look at it on a map, it just all fits. It makes everything fit as far as you got a little, you know, you start moving a little bit west. We've gone as far west as Bowling Green in recent years and stuff like that. And you know, not saying we don't want to go back, not saying, I mean, I'd love to have a complete Midwest division of PDRA, let's be honest. And I'm not going to say that's ever off the table. I'd love to grow this thing into more and make it into different parts of the country. But we've said for a long time we need to get to Bristol. They did some work on the racetrack last year, right before the National. And, man, it was really good. I went down there a couple weeks ago with Tommy and myself and Miss Judy. And the facility's gorgeous. I mean, we've all seen the pictures. We all know the picturesque of Thunder Valley. The racing surface is really good. We're not worried at all. You know, for years it's always been, oh, you got to get through the tunnels and stuff like that. They did an excellent job whenever they came in and did some grind work on it. And it's really smooth. I feel like we're going to be in good shape. And, you know, it's just going to be a good time. We were all talking about it. It's been over 10 years since an eighth mile pro mod organization has been to Bristol. And oh, wow. To be the first ones back, man, we're looking forward to it.
Hey guys, let me remind you real quick that each and every episode of the West Buck Show is brought to you by our friends at Redline Synthetic Oils. Redline has a reputation with racers and hardcore enthusiasts for creating products that perform and protect better than any on the market, and they've been doing it since 1979. Whether it's your race car, your tow rig, your motorcycle, or your lawnmower, when you think about lubricants, you need to think about Redline. For more information, log on to redlineoil.com. Support the brands that support drag racing, and Redline definitely fits the bill. No doubt about it. Again, that's a part of the country that I think it's just a smart play because there's a built-in fan base. I mean, there's a group of people that live in and around that area that will come out of, you know, will come out to support a door slammer show. I think it's cool to see like outlaw eighth mile racers get the opportunity to go to tracks like that. Yeah. These big iconic facilities that, you know, oftentimes are kind of earmarked as an NHRA track. The big events that happen there are NHRA races. And I think that seeing the PDRA get this could be the start of something special there. Like, it really, really could, because you guys have those, like the Virginia races have developed real reverence, right? Like, everybody wants to be there. The Gallant events, like you said, they've got a spot on the calendar that people look forward to those. They do such a good job at that facility that it also works really well. But you need, like, you got Norwalk on there. I mean, people are going to start building their calendars around, hey, I want to be at that one.
Yes.
I think that that's an incredible thing, man. I want to talk on something. I mentioned Ricky Smith, and I just think this is an interesting point. And this is no shot at anybody, but I do think it speaks to the level of competition within the PDRA. How crazy was it to have a multi-time champion like Tricky Ricky Smith, a guy who's done it all in the world of door slammer racing, won multiple NHRA championships, which is, you know, oftentimes considered the pros or the highest level of door slammer drag racing? What's it say for the PDRA that, you know, Ricky obviously came in and had a great year last year, but not, it's not like one of these NHRA guys came in and just cleaned the house with everybody in Pro Nitrous. Like, that almost had to be a little bit of a feather in your cap, doesn't it? Like, that your guys come on in, Ricky, right? You ain't going to just come in and steamroll us.
Yeah. It's funny. We always mess with Ricky, and he, you know, for years he would say, I'm going to come over and show you boys how this is done. And we're like, come on, Jack. Like, I mean, it's not going to be as easy as you think, but you know, to see Ricky come in, and really, I'm going to say this, I expected Ricky to be a little behind early in the year and then come on strong through the rest of the season. You know, Ricky to me is always a driver that is very scary when it's hot outside, because he may not blaze the scoreboard down, but he is going to go down the racetrack. And we've always known that Ricky's going to be one that's going to, he's going to turn on a scoreboard. It may not have a wind light on top of it, but he's going to give
you, it's
going to
make the trip.
He's going to make the trip every run down the racetrack. And he really came out at Galat. And I think if I remember right, he went 364, 363, like first race out. We were all like, oh boy, like, did not see Ricky coming in with that kind of performance that early in the year. And then I, you know, he ran into some trouble mid year and, you know, still made a good run. I think he finished fourth in the point standings, but you know, to have a living legend like Ricky Smith come in and, you know, from the outside, everybody looks at that and goes, oh man, that, you know, Ricky's gonna come in there and just show him what's up. And, you know, to see the guys that have raced with us for all 10 years or just the last couple, still stand tall and still be at the top of the leaderboard at the end of the day, it's really neat. It's a good feeling for us because, and we say it all the time, we'll welcome you in all day long. If you race with another series or you don't have a series, we'll welcome you in all day long. We're going to be nice to you, everything like that. Now you're probably going to come and you're not going to like it because we're going to kick your teeth in, but you're going to, but you're going to learn how to be a better racer. And we've seen it. I mean, we've seen guys that have won championships at other series, at other organizations, come to run with us the next year and go, dude, I can't get out of first round. I can't qualify. Like, this is a different level. And, you know, at the end of it, you sit back and you go, man, that's, you know, oh boy, are we scaring people off? But at the same time, it's like, you know, people go other
places. How do you put the rabbit, like, back in the hat? You know,
you can't beat it. Like, you're racing with the best.
We kind of saw that at the World Series of Pro Mod. You know, yes. I mean, you know, and you guys have bragging rights right now. You know, basically,
man.
I love every minute of it. I think it's going to be a quiet winter. I'm going to tell you that much right now.
Well, and that's because that's honestly, and Jay, I got goosebumps again. But it's like that's like the breakthrough moment, I think, for any sanction, any series, any event, when qualifying becomes a huge accomplishment.
Yep.
And I see that within the PDRA, it has become a thing where if you just get your name in those top 16 spots come race day, that's the first mountain to climb. And that's, once you're on the top of that mountain, like you can stick your chest out forevermore that you qualified. I mean, it's funny. We were talking about Erica Enders and her success last week, 6 world championships, unheard of. And I know plenty of people that have all but killed themselves to qualify once, you know what I mean? At an NHRA pro stock race. And I think we're seeing that develop with Pro Boost and Pro Nitrous, where just being on that list amongst all these absolute savages,
that's insane. Even Mountain
Motor, that is victory in and of itself. Oh, great. Extreme. What a turnaround that class has had. Are you surprised by that? I am a little bit.
If I remember right, at World Finals, we had 22 or 23 make a qualifying attempt. And if I'm stretching, I think the bump was like 410. Like, that's no joke. I remember when 410 was number one qualifier and you were the baddest dude to ever sit behind a clutch pedal. Like,
it's incredible. The turnaround that class has had. And I got to give there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen for sure. But the way they've kind of banded together, and there's little pockets of them that are kind of clicked up, but that community has really made a decision that like, hey, we ain't going to go down without a fight. We are not going to go away. We're not going silently into the night. And keeping the technology under control, I think that's what we're going to see in the coming years is there's a double, it's the old Garth Brooks double-edged sword, right? It's a blessing and a curse. And it is, because you get all this new buzz and you get all this new energy, and here comes some big names. Here comes some big budgets. And it's not like there's not been big budgets there before, but you're talking about big budgets that are attached to big race teams. I think one of the biggest storylines of 23 was Elite Motorsports diving into the Mountain Motor Pro Stock world. And I think there were a lot of people going, I don't know if this is good or bad. Like what? Because, I mean, you're talking about a professional race team, and that's no knock against anyone that exists, but this is a group of people who earn their living drag racing. And I don't know that you can say that about really anybody else that's involved in Mountain Motor Pro Stock. It's a passion. It's a sideline type of thing for a lot of these guys. And it's going to be interesting to see like how that translates to the rest of the team. Because to your earlier point, Tyler, I like to see it. Because you every once in a while, you need some people to come in and raise the bar.
You do.
And I think that even if they don't dominate, no matter what they do, no matter what success they have on the track, the presence of that team is a positive for Mountain Motor Pro Stock. And it will push all those guys and gals to find a way to level up. Do you remember when Billy Glidden showed up in Extreme 10.5 in the ADRL heydays? Everybody, and there was a lot of people worried, like Billy Glidden is a problem. Wherever he goes, he's a nuanced racer. He knows how to build a combination to the rules. He knows how to work the rules in his favor. And that's something to be proud of. I mean, that's not a bad thing. There's a lot of people that I think put a little bit of a negative spin on rule book racers. But who can knock somebody for finding an advantage or finding a way to have an edge, especially with Billy Glidden? His was always, he's a small block guy.
Yeah.
And he knows the small block nitrous deal inside and out. I remember the whole class, ADRL 10.5 at the time, was like a 430 operation. For anybody that ran 430s was in the hunt. Steve Kirk, Mike Hill, there was a slew of them, right?
Bunch. Yeah.
There was a bunch of them. But here comes Billy Glidden, and he slowly chipped away at it. And within, I'd say, a year, a single season, you had to be like a mid-teens guy. Yeah. To be in the conversation. And it's crazy how a single person, the participation of a single team sometimes can force the whole program to level up. So who knows? I mean, I cannot believe we haven't seen a 3-second run out of those cars,
but you know, for a spectator looking in, they may not know the list of characters in that class. And correct. when they see Erica or whoever behind the wheel, you know, running in that class, you know, maybe it wakes them up a little bit, like, what's going on?
What's
you know,
this?
And yeah, pays a little bit more attention.
It's familiar.
You know, it's popular enough that she's going to try it, you know, then maybe I need to start paying a little bit more attention to it.
Exactly.
I'm genuinely thrilled to see that, because you talk to a lot of the, like, most people will tell you that those are some of, if not the funnest car to drive in all of drag racing. Like, I've heard that
from a ton of people. Tommy's told me the most fun car he ever drove was his Mountain Motor Pro Stock car. And I'm like, dude, you just won your third Pro Nitrous World Championship. What are you talking about? He's like, that Pro Stock car is fun to drive.
I mean, that by all accounts, it's I've had a bunch of people. Rick Jones told me that like there's just nothing like that kind of power.
Yeah.
You know, geared as aggressively as they are, banging gears with the wheels off the ground. I mean, those are real deal race cars. And I'm glad to see them kind of getting their moment in the sun again, because it wasn't that long ago that, you know, you get on Racing Junk or whatever, and it's just one 800-inch motor for sale after another, and an old, old IHRA Pro Stock cars that, you know, people are trying to sell as top sportsmen or quick eight cars. And I'm going, man, it would be a tragedy to see this brand of racing completely go the way of the dodo. And I'm glad to see it.
I'm glad we never gave up on it. You know, I mean, that was, you know,
and I think you had some reasons.
There was a lot of people that bailed, and you know, there was a lot of times that we looked at it and went, man, like something's got to change. And we all collectively said, let's hang with it. You know, it's got to make a turn at some point. And I'm glad we did. You know, the class needs a spot. The PDRA needs a third and fourth class that you can, you know, like we've all said, you know, you got to have a band of characters. You can only have so many characters in Pro Nitrous and Pro Boost. Just like an HRA can only have so many characters in Top Fuel and Funny Car. So,
yeah,
you know, we have to have those extra classes. And I personally feel like our third and fourth is Extreme Pro Stock and Pro Street. And I feel like we're in a great spot on both of those classes. We've really put some, we probably should have put some more work into some other ones at times, but really kind of went all in on those two classes over the last couple of years. And I think it shows in the car counts. I mean, Extreme Pro Stock's been great the last back half of 23. And then Pro Street is almost at a spot where it's going to see 16 cars, I think, at every race from here on out. That's awesome, and that's huge, in my opinion, to see that style of racing come back. You know, that's what I grew up with back in the Orska days and all that. So to see that class come back with new technology, new names, new drivers, and even some old drivers, that class is pretty fun to watch. And I think it's going to be good next season as well.
Well, I think there were some legit heavy hitting hot rods sitting on jack stands, because as radial tire racing evolved, and I've got to talk to Donald about this because I'm going to get him to admit that pro modified racing is what paved the way for the future success of radial racing. Like, if it weren't for legit tube chassis pro mod cars, you know, I don't know where all of that would be right now. The small tire. But I don't know that that would have been bad. Yeah. But being that ship has already failed,
it's Jamie Hancock's fault. I mean, the whole damn thing.
Yeah. I blame Jamie. I mean, but if you think about it, that was such a, like, that was a marker moment. It was an absolute turning point for small tire racing. And I'm personally, and this is just me speaking purely as a fan, 10.5W racing, like, it has still to this day, and I think I experienced that when we announced the inaugural Pro 10.5 Challenge that honors PDRA Pro Street rules. That's a tip of our cap to you, Tyler. I don't know if you, I hope you interpret it that way. That's how we want it to come across. When we, you know, we're really proud of our World Series of Pro Mod rules, but everything else, whenever we go do one of these things, we like to honor an existing set of rules as a nod to the people that are giving these folks a place to race throughout the season. And we genuinely appreciate you guys giving them a place to race. But these cars, there's a whole bunch of them that I think go, well, I don't want to go build a new pro mod car. Mm-hmm. I like my steel roof and quarters hot rod, my factory firewall stuff. And those cars, they either had to, in theory, move down right to a 275 class or move somewhere else or go no prep race. And there wasn't a marquee place to run a 10.5W car. So now, and especially if you start talking about these guys that want to race throughout the year, I mean, Donald's given a home, Donald Long, and the radial tire series and the stuff that he does at Orlando with Ozzy, like, he's given those guys a place a handful of times a year. But I do think that there's a whole world of those steel roof and quarter cars that know they can't go compete more than likely with what's a good example? Brian Markowitz or
even Mo Hall,
Jason Lee,
on 275s. Like, different. I mean, that's a different level. And we've said that, you know, we speak on it on the pro mod side. You know, those guys that have fully bought into being on the radio side, that's a different level. You're never going to be as good bouncing back and forth as a team that's fully 100% on board. And you know, to see these guys that have said, we're going to stay on the 33 and we're going to battle it out and we're going to go through the hardships. And, you know, now it's almost like we're almost there. Now we're just got to keep at it. Like you said, you know, you throw a couple big races a year for these guys. And, you know, I think we'll touch on that next little bits. But it just starts adding some flair to it. It's like, man, you know, I can go race for a championship. I can go race for these two or three races a year for big money. You know, man, I can go race my car 12, 13 times, race for big money, race for a championship.
Race at cool places, safe places
to go race. And that's enticing. Absolutely. You know, there's people that want to race 8 times a year. There's people that race 15 times a year. And I think that's a good spot to be.
Yep. I couldn't agree more, man. And if we get a couple, like, I've heard through the grapevine that, like, guys like Steve Kirk Jr. are throwing around things, seeing the things that are happening. And if it wouldn't take... And I'm not saying we need all this nostalgia, but if a couple of those guys came back and all the established cast of characters that you have now, we could have ourselves a real, it'd be an exciting thing to see come back, because I do think there are a lot of people that thought it was over, gone. But man, those cars, I mean, if you talk about some of the best looking hot rods, cars that still look like cars, the cars that are still relatable, all those things that people like to talk about, right? You see a lot of those cars with factory trim on them, factory style paint jobs, all those things that speak to that car culture demo of people that have warm fuzzies for old vintage hot rods and stuff. Those cars need a place to go. They need a place to race, and they deserve to get to race for big money. Like, I know one of the things that I'm most excited about when it comes to the World Series of Pro Mod coming up in March is the addition of Pro 10-5. That they are a fantastic addition to that show. And and they don't necessarily compete like with your Pro Mod portion of your show, because they look so different. They look way different on track. Same.
You know, and we have the argument all the time at PDRA of, how do you tell the difference in a Pro Mod and a Top Sportsman and a 632 car? And from a casual racing fan, these things all look the damn same. Like, they do. They all have a different paint scheme, but you know, when you look at the shape and the look of the car, they mostly look the same. The two classes that look different are Pro Street and Super Street. And they look like a real car that somebody is relatable to. And I really feel like that's part of the attraction to those classes, and it's opened a new demographic for us, which in turn puts more fans in the stands. And hey, that's the goal at the end of the day.
I think that's what the attraction was to radio racing.
It was 100%. It's how it started. Yeah. Hey, I've got a body that looks like the one my uncle had. Yep, exactly.
Like, my buddies could get together and build that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's, even though we all know better, I think that all of these categories in drag racing kind of live and die by the perception.
Yes.
Like, it's what is the perception? And I think that, you know, even Pro Mod is kind of dangerously close to this perception that it's not, I could never do that, right? However, you don't got to look very hard to find some guys that are really, you know, compete at a high level, have their name kind of in the conversation in an ongoing fashion, and do a lot of it themselves. You know, I mean, there's definitely haves and have nots. There's definitely some separation, but I really think that that's kind of where door slammer racing, that's when the magic happens, is that you have people like JT saying that are sitting at home going, you know what? If me and you and Bob go in on this deal, and Jimmy down the road's got that Fulton motor, you know what I mean? Like, you can piecemeal a program together, and I've got a car, you've got a truck and trailer. Like, it's still, the dream is still alive, right? And that's, I mean, we talk about it with Top Fuel and Funny Car. I think one of the issues with those categories is that it's totally out of reach. Oh, I can never afford to do that. And now, granted, I know that there's maybe an argument against that, but that's, I think, how the masses feel.
Yes.
And I think what you really accomplish with 10-5W racing and Super Street classes like that is it looks attainable. It looks like it something that the regular guy, I go back to No Prep Kings, no doubt they've done a fantastic job building stars, all those things. And we can talk about that and the challenge that is. But I think initially that deal was built on the back of looking possible. Like, this looks like a bunch of do-it-yourselfers finding their own way, cars that got primer body panels on them, old back half Mustangs that sat in garages.
Yeah.
I mean, I had one of our best customers at Drag Illustrated tell me that he's made millions on cars that have never made it to the racetrack. And it hit me like a ton of bricks in that moment, but it spoke to this dynamic we're discussing right now, is that he was saying, he's like, dude, I would argue that a large majority of our customers' cars never ultimately make it to the track. You know what I mean? Like, it's a project that they were inspired by, right? They saw Chuck Seitzinger on No Prep Kings, and he's got a 5.0 Mustang with a hatchback. So they took theirs and they bought a back half kit from so-and-so chassis shop, and they installed it. And, you know, then they ran out of money, right? Yeah. Or the wifey gets mad
in the corner.
But it's a reminder. I mean, how many projects, Tyler, you know, you've had stuff sitting on jacks in the corner of the shop before, and it's like,
still do. That's the problem.
Still do. And I think that aspirational culture is a big part of drag racing.
Is
that it's like a lot of these projects. I mean, if you think about all the cars that make it to the track on any given weekend, think about all the ones that don't are still, I mean, that get fired up every once in a while to, you know, keep them lubed up or whatever, cleaned out. I mean, there's a ton of cars sitting around, and I'm glad to see, you know, a place, especially for some of these cars that still look like cars and cars that people have built themselves, right? Because that was also the big part of Outlaw 10.5 during its heyday. All of those cars were like built in somebody's shop. They weren't built by Jerry Bickle or built by Rick Jones or built by Haas. You know, they were built in some dude's shop and they worked all night on it for years and years and years and finally got it together. So I don't know, man. That's the stuff that I
it's something different.
Yeah, it really is. All right, I want to talk about something else because we were talking about Bristol and how these events can kind of take on a life of their own, and you never know what it is that's going to be the thing that trips people's triggers. Like, is it going to be Outlaw 8th Mile at a historic facility like Bradenton or like Bristol? What's it going to be? And I'm curious, like, do you have, let's wax nostalgic here for a moment. Like, what were the events when you look back, Tyler, that like really had an impact on you as far as like what you wanted, what you want your legacy to be in drag racing? Like, what were the events that really kind of tickled your fancy and go, oh, this is something special, or made a mark on you?
Yeah. Probably the first heads up race that really ever made me go, okay, this is cool, was actually Orscut Huntsville. The race where they paid $50,000 to win. I think that was the largest paying 10.5 race.
I think it was
like ever, if I remember right. Scott Lowry debuted his Cadillac, like that whole Mike Hill was there, you know, just the whole Mike Hill did win it, didn't he?
Yeah, man. Went on the cover of Drag Illustrated magazine after that, man.
But like that race was like, it had a mantra of its own. And, you know, you leave that race and you go watch a quick 8 race at a local track, or you go watch NHRA on TV or whatever. But the one thing that always stood out to me was, it wasn't that it paid $50,000. It's that everybody wanted to be there. Was it because it was Orscut? Was it because it was $50,000? Was it because it was Huntsville? I don't know. But it made its own atmosphere. Like it had an attitude. It was the coolest race in that time span. And, you know, I left that with my dad and we went down for like one day and thought it was the greatest thing ever. And then a couple years later, we were watching videos online or something and ran into one of Donald's races. And it's like, let's ride down there and check that out. So we rode down South Georgia, checked that out. But, you know, I don't know if I could say one solid race like paved the way. Probably the Orscut race at Huntsville. If I had to say, that was the one that opened my eyes to it. And then, you know, you start watching the pro mod stuff and you learn in all that ways and all that. But, you know, the sport is so multifaceted that it's like, if we can take a little bit from every piece of the pie and make it into one thing, I think it could be a flat out one day hero shot. And that's really what I've tried to build with the Pro Stars deal. You know, you can't go take a PDRA race or a World Series Pro Mod. You can't do that in one day. Like, it's just not humanly possible. But we've taken that All-Star program where, you know, you take the top 8 supporters of the year, come in for one day and pair it up with concerts and nitro cars and alcohol and, you know, all the extra glitz and glamour classes that everybody wants to see, and throw it all together in one day. And it's like, it's a stress-filled day.
Yeah,
but it's like, if you're a racing fan, you can come to the racetrack for one day, get there at noon, leave at 10 if you don't want to stay for the last concert, and you can see the best racing you'll ever see in 10 hours. And that's an easy sell. We say it's an easy sell. We haven't put 10,000 people in there yet. But I really feel like where our sport is now is we are fighting so hard with stick and ball sports, with Little League, with any kind of kid activity. Let's be honest. I mean, we just went through it with Jay jumping out of the seat in Pro Nitrous. You know, kids take precedence, as they should. But at the same time, you know, how do we make our sport become more enticing to a common fan? You know, when you tell them, hey, you got to go to the racetrack for 3 days to see it all, it's like, I'm good.
It's rough.
It's hard. It's a hard sell to get people to completely buy in. But when you can tell them, hey, look, you got to come in for, I don't know, a couple hours a day. Oh, hey, I can do that. So, you know,
I think it's all
that mindset. It's hard.
going back to Huntsville, man, it's funny because what is it? And I think that maybe it's just like the, I like to analyze everything, but I think back on that moment in time. I was at that race and I think it was April of 2006. That's actually yep. where I met John for the third, the photography legend.
Photographer that ever picked one up.
He was shooting from the grandstands, I remember, and I was a terrible photographer, but I was trying my best and struggling. And he was one of the guys that I said, hey, man, how about can you just shoot photos for Drag Illustrated? And like, I'll stop because I'm not doing very good at this. And it was the beginning of a lifelong friendship. But I think back on that event is it had some of those components that we've talked about, like with World Series and some of these other pro stars where it's this coming together. It's this worlds collide moment, yes. in my opinion, because that was another one of those. It was an Orska event, so you had all like the points earners and all that stuff, but there were some guys that event was it was a turning point on so many levels. One of the ones that really stuck out to me was Roy Hill was there with his Pro Mod car, the red Mustang that said Roy Hill's Drag Racing School on the side of it, with Mike Bell driving it. Mike Bell, an icon, incredibly talented guy, but it was so funny having a conversation with Roy, and Mike came to that race. And I remember talking to him. They go, hey, dude, this is like the first time we've ever been to one of these. They didn't say dude, but they said, hey, this is the first time we've ever been to one of these races. And Pro Mod was second on the billing.
Yeah.
Outlaw 10-5. That was, to me, that was the moment that Outlaw 10-5 and small tire racing, if I had to go way back and identify a single happening, and I'm curious if you'll agree with me, that was the moment that small tire racing leapfrogged Pro Mod.
It was.
Like, don't get me wrong. There was a lot of places. There was a lot of great Pro Mod racing, and there was a lot of great Pro Mod racing
and,
to come.
And Pro Mod leaped back.
Pro Mod leaped back. But it kind of speaks to the ebb and flow of these things. Yes. I was telling somebody the other day, like, bell bottoms were in style. They went out of style. But those sons of bitches are back. They're back. You know what I mean? And it's crazy because one human being, Lainey Wilson,
said
made them fashionable again. And sometimes that's all it takes, one person to say, you know what, I still think these are cool, I'm gonna rock them now. And that, I think we're kind of seeing that happen right now with the 10-5W thing. But going back to that moment, there was a lot of interesting storylines, because Ian Tocker wrote a really incredible piece for Drag Illustrated many, many moons ago that was called The Rise and Fall of Outlaw 10-5. Mm-hmm. And it kind of examined how it started, you know, at Brainerd Optimist Dragway and some of these other, you know, nitty gritty Saturday night drag strips. And it becomes this thing that, I mean, I remember hearing about Outlaw 10-5 and some of these events and being exposed to them for the first time, like in the mid 2000s, I guess, probably would have been when I first started really getting tuned into that community. It was like 2000, probably three, four, five. And that, it was such a significant happening that it was funny because it actually, this flies in the face of so many thought processes that people have about purses, is that was, to your point, the biggest payout Outlaw 10-5 race ever, the George Howard's Outlaw Nationals, yep. 50,000 to win, but they couldn't fill a 32 car field. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, Orska could go to Atlanta Dragway and run for $7,000 and have 40 or 50 cars. Yep. But what happened, it was really interesting. And I still think that this is a dance that we do as promoters. The purse got big. And so all these guys that were kind of bottom of the field guys, they go, screw it, I'm not going. Right. Tim Lynch is going to be there. Jack Barfield's going to be there. Mike Hill's going to be there. Steve Kirk's going to be there. You know, like, there's no sense in me even going. We'll go watch. And I think that was, and that's kind of the ongoing battle that I think all of us contend with. I know that I even contend with that, because like right now, this is me like airing out, like real, being like truly transparent. You know, I see Donald Long announce that he's going to do a 100,000 deal or whatever. And I'm like, well, now I need to pay 200. You know what I mean? Like that, like literally, like, all right, World yeah. Series needs to be double that. And
it's funny. We actually,
but you have to be careful, right? You have to be careful because you
can't come back.
Exactly. There's you no can't go back. There's no coming back, and you have to keep it sustainable over the long haul. And like, even in this moment, I'm having to like restrain myself, because I also don't want to, I don't want to experience that moment in time where the prize got so big
where you go,
and there was, Right. Because, I mean, I'm not so sure. I mean, we have fuel teams right now that want to get involved with World Series of Pro Mod, asking if they can rent a car, trying to buy stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a conversation that's happening in the background right now. And I don't know. I mean, just think about it. I mean, and this is a situation that I've actually kind of dreamed of. Don Schumacher Racing has stepped out of Top Fuel and Funny Car, Pro Stock. He's, you know, he's partners in a handful of teams. But what if one of these guys, what if an environment develops, which I think it's happening, where they could justify having a Pro Mod car in their stable?
Yeah.
Like, and but is Pro Mod ready for that? Right? Ooh. You know, as a whole, are we ready to have Don Schumacher out here? Are we ready to have Tony Stewart Racing out here? Are we ready? I mean, I think there's a pathway to that.
I think the road is becoming paved very quickly.
I really do. And you have to kind of, you have to tell yourself you can get on the wrong side of the big purse real quick. Yeah. I think you guys, you and Jason Rueckert, a handful of the people that were involved in Limited Drag Racing.
Yeah. Jason and I did that for a lot of years.
And you guys kept the purse low.
We said
to try to keep people away.
Yep. We said really? We're gonna keep the purse at $5,000 or less to win. And I think we had it kept there for 5 or 6 years. And it's like, you know, of course you would still hear, man, can't we run for big money? Can't we run for big money? Well, yeah, but you're not gonna like it. And it's like we're not dogging you or nothing. But you are gonna be the very one that's gonna come up and say, man, why'd we do that? That was stupid.
Guys, real quick, the West Buck Show, I want to remind you, is brought to you each and every week by way of flowracing.com. If you're a drag racer or a hardcore drag racing enthusiast, you got to get on board with Flow Racing. The worldwide leader in sports live streaming, Flow Racing provides unlimited access to drag racing's biggest events like Donald Long's Sweet 16, Lights Out, No Mercy, every stop on the PDRA and NMCA tours, Funny Car Chaos, World Cup Finals, Streetcar Super Nationals, the forthcoming World Series of Pro Mod, and much, much more. Personally, Flow Racing is a fixture in my life. I'm able to follow along with all my favorite drag racing events from the comfort of my own home or while I'm out on the road. I promise you, there is no limit to the good that Flow Racing can do in the sport of drag racing. They are changing this community for the better, and you can join the movement by logging on to flowracing.com today. It's hard because more is better, right? More money, yep. more money. But you have to keep these things in mind because
it's so, like you said, hard.
There's no going back.
No.
You know, and if you do go back, or if you try to go back, like, you better be prepared to sell it, spin it. You better be adding a class. You better be doing something with that money. Right?
You better be good at words. I'm not that good.
It's a tough one. It's something that I honestly think about all the time, is how we can keep.
Yes.
Because that's and honestly, maybe all that has to happen is conversations about it. I think these are things that historically didn't get talked about in the open. But I think if we talk about these things in the open, go like, hey, we all want to do more, pay more, blah, 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 all those things, obviously, right? But we have to keep it sustainable and responsible for itself. Because if you look back, I mean, these sanctioned series events announce these big payouts, announce this big race, but then the sponsor goes away, right? Or the rich guy goes away. And then now what?
Yeah.
And that stuff.
We just had the same conversation talking PDRA. Cause it's like, you know, a lot of people will look at it and go, oh, well, this group's paying, you know, I don't know, $18,000 to Pro Mod. And I'm like, well, that's cute. We pay $50,000 a race to Pro Mod. It doesn't look like it because we pay $7,500 to win right now. But there's two classes. Each one of them is $24,800 a race. And it's like, you know, people look at that and go, oh, well, that's forgotten. You only pay $7,500 to win, but it pays $750 to qualify. Or you win one round and get $1,000. And it's like, those numbers don't look big. But when there's eight people that lose first round that get paid $750 or $1,000 or whatever that number is, you know, that number gets multiplied by eight. That adds up in a hurry. And, you know, from like a shakedown or a World Series of Pro Mod side, you know, I'm not saying we don't have to worry about it as much, but we, you know, we can go out and say, hey, we're going to spend more up top and not pay as much on the qualifying or the first round loser, whatever side, because it's one race. Like,
it's hard, dude. It's such a dance.
Race where, on the PDRA side, it's like, okay, I've got to buy these people in for 8-9 races. I have to make this enticing for a year. That's incredibly hard. And like, we've looked at it from the way of going, you know, we pay $50,000 in ProMod an event. It's eight events. That's $400,000 in money that goes to ProMod every year. And it's like, woof, I'd love to be the one that goes up there and drops 20 grand to win, but it's not sustainable. You can't repeat that. And now you could go do it one time and go, woo, that's badass. But you start looking at the books on that at the end of the year and you're going, well,
it's hard to make that math.
How do we make the numbers work? And that's what I don't think racers understand that as much, because just like what you said, promoters have done a really bad job of hiding the truth because we don't want to spread bad news. Let's be honest. We all want to have the positive story, the, hey, look what we're doing now. And we kind of shy away from those hard conversations that are, hey, why aren't we paying more? Well, there's eight races a year. We go up $1,000 a race. That's $8,000.
Yeah. Like, no, I get it. I mean, the conversation, has to be about keeping this stuff going.
Yes.
And that's what I remind myself of. Like when I start doing what I like, when we start calling sponsors and working on these things, like I'm terrible about asking people for money. And right. It's like not something that I'm especially good at. However, in recent years, I've realized and have kind of accepted the fact that we want these things to happen. The community wants them to happen. People want to be able to get excited about it. People want to be able to look forward to it. And if it's some deal that's barely surviving or scraping by, just due entirely to the incredible nature of so many of these people that exist in racing, that's not sustainable. I mean, and that's probably what I'm the most proud of with Drag Illustrated or the World Series of Pro Mod. Like last year, I will admit, we didn't really work hard. I'm not saying we didn't try, but I knew going into it, it's like this, we've got to sell tickets. We've got to make this thing make money on day one, because I don't want racers every year wondering if it's going to happen. Like, you know, and that I had kind of gotten myself into that situation where it was like, I was scraping together to make it happen. And it's like, we've got to find a way to elevate beyond that. And it's a real challenge, but educating racers and getting them invested in it where it's like, hey, listen, I'm transparent. I want this to be fair, but there's got to be something to go around for everybody. Everybody's got to win. Yeah. It can't just be, you know, it can't be lopsided totally one way or the other. Like in that, we posted a reel on Drag Illustrated social that took off, and it was me just talking about how racers just want to be in an equally yoked relationship. It doesn't have to be totally in their favor, but it's just got to be fair. And I think that is something to your point, Tyler. There's so much smoke and mirrors. There's so many conversations that never get had in an open, you know, platform or in front of the world. And that's probably one of the things that I'm most proud of, is just having created an environment where these conversations can be had in like an open space and people talk about these things. Because drag race, this is an incredible group of people. I mean, absolutely incredible 100%. Group of people that will find a way to go drag racing. And if they believe in what you're doing, and they believe it's happening for the right reasons, and they're not going to hate you for being successful. You know what I mean? They want it to be successful so that they can keep doing it year after year after year. And I think
we just had this conversation about bracket racing. That there was a couple races here lately that have been, you know, really strong in car counts, and some promoters would cut buybacks, some wouldn't, some, you know, and those kind of things. Right. And it's like, you know, some people would go, oh, it's being greedy. Other people are going, hey, I mean, I can understand it because you got to stay in business. But, you know, there's
a fine line.
There's a fine right? line. And it's like, you know, I think there's a spot where you have to draw a line in the sand. But at the same time, if the promoter or the racetrack is successful, you know that race is coming back next year. Or you know that, you know, we all put in so much time to these things. And, you know, I say it all the time, and I hear it from Tommy, in which now, of course, I just pick it up. But it's like, a lot of these people that go out and do one race a year, like you guys go out and you got the pro deal. Now you've got World Series of Pro Mod. Now, you know,
and but it changes things. I mean, I'm here to give you your credit. Like I'm here to
say a lot. And it's like, okay, you understand it from a way other than just a one-time promoter goes out and throws a one big money bracket race. I'm going to walk in, I'm going to do my deal. I'm going to start on Thursday. I'm going to walk away on Sunday night and I'll see you again next year. Those kind of people need to do what we do one time. And it's like, they need to be around our sport 10 weeks a year. Just like, you know, just like what you guys do all year long with being engulfed in just reporting it. y'all can have that. I'll stay on my side. But it's
no, I mean, it's there's a, it's I mean, I hear you. Like I'm here to tell you
that don't that, that come in and do it one time and walk away. And it's like, guys,
no, I get it. You dude. Guys I mean, it's, need I, to,
you know, y'all need
I give
to
you guys tons of credit.
It's a year long deal if you want to do it the right way. And there's so many
I give you guys,
want, you know,
a lot of credit, man, because doing it, it is, it's a totally like to try to generate that excitement and energy and enthusiasm around something.
It's hard.
And then maintain it over the course of
so hard
an extended period of time is so challenging. And I think that honestly, like the way that, no, it's hard, man, but
I even said this, I was that guy for forever that like when I did Outlaw Street Girl Reunion for all those years,
yeah,
you know, I was like, man, this isn't bad. Like it's not terrible at all. And then I got into this deal and I'm like, this is stupid. Like this is
it's such an incredible opportunity. And what you guys have done and the community that you've built is it's likely unrivaled really in drag racing. I mean, just the buy-in that you had from the masses. It's impressive.
I think there's been, you know, every time, every dog has its day. Let's be honest. Like we've had that discussion a number of years, you and I both have. And I think at some point everybody's going to get on a high side and you're going to ride that wave until the wave crashes. And I hope we're at the beginning of our wave, but at the same time, I really feel like the last couple of years have been a good building block for all of us, for the series side, you know, for the sustainability for somebody to go race a championship, to run pro mod and stuff like that. I really feel like we've done a good job of that. For you guys stepping out, doing the big money races that keep those teams thriving through the winter and pushing, hey, I want to get better. I want to get better. You know, I have guys that have come to race with PDRA and have said, I hope I get invited to World Series of Pro Mod because I supported PDRA and I did good at this season and stuff like that. So I think it's a mirror image that we all have to be together, but I don't think one group can do it all. So I think it's absolutely great that multiple sides are being successful. Because I'll just use this as an example. If everybody relied on PDRA for pro mod racing, there's no way we could do it. Absolutely right. No way.
You couldn't serve them all.
You could not.
You literally couldn't serve them
all. And I think that's been the greatest part of it is, you know, everybody has their spot. And I feel like our spot at the PDRA is we're going to give you a really good series to race. We're going to give you good racetracks. We're going to put on good shows. We're going to be organized, blah, blah, blah. All the sales pitch stuff. But I think there's things that we cannot do because it takes eight times a year to do it. And
yeah,
that's what I like about the one-off events is you can go be creative. You can go do things different. You know, I'll shed a little bit of light. We're going to bring Shakedown back next year, moving it back to the fall in September at VMP. And we're going to do a format that's never been seen in drag racing. And you know, I'll shed a little bit of light on it. I don't care. I mean, we're going to debut the news right here.
Yeah, I like it.
We're going to debut the news. So I'm going to steal your part a little bit, as we've talked about on off air. We're going to do a 48 car invite only pro mod field. And we're going to do one round of qualifying Thursday night. And that will set the field for 6 8 car heat races. We are going to run this thing like a dirt car race. 6 8 car heat races. The goal and the numbers are still, we're still playing around. We want to pay $5,000 purse in each heat race. So that'd be $30,000 in heat race purses that will go up. The winners and runner-ups of each heat race will go to the A main on Saturday. The semifinalists will go to the B main. And then I got to figure out what's the rest of the show look like. It's going to be a really expensive program to do, but my thing is, you know, all these pro mod races,
getting a lot of people involved. I mean, that's
a lot of people involved, and it's going to take a lot of planning to get this right because I feel like we're going to mess this up. But at the same time, you know, you guys stepped out and did the chip draw deal. It was much needed because let's be honest, if you hadn't, it would look just like an NHRA pro mod race. It would look just like a PDRA yeah. pro mod race. It would be the same. And that was the only thing that I said whenever we decided, all right, we got our national event back at Virginia. kind of filled that spring date. We got to move Shakedown back to the fall. The only way I would do it is if we could come up with something that's unique. I did not want a same old pro mod race that pulls up with three rounds qualifying and shoots down a 32 car field to one. We've done that before. We do it at PDRA. We have PDRA here twice a year. You got to make this different. And we were all sitting around, and I'm going to be the very one that says it. Mark Mintzer was the one that came up with the idea. And Mark was like, why don't we run this thing like a dirt track race? And I'm like, what is he talking about? And then the more we sat there and talked, it was like, that makes sense. You know, just, you know, you earn your way into the A main, you earn your way into the B main. And I mean, the goal is to pay some really big money in it.
And hey, gang, remember that each and every episode of the Westbuck Show is made possible by way of our friends at Stroud Safety. Stroud Safety is known for their top quality racing safety equipment, from drag chutes and seatbelts to fire suits and blankets, all 100% made in America. Log on to StroudSafety.com today and make sure you tell them we sent you.
I mean, if that deal is done well, which I'm sure it will be, the thing I think is that you do create some of that. The same thing we were talking about with simply qualifying at a PDRA race, where you're going to create an environment that I think supports, hey man, we made it in the B field. We've been working, you know, like make that a point of pride. Yeah. Well, that's a huge accomplishment, let alone if you get into the A field, you're a god out
you're
here.
You're a bad man.
You know, I like it, man. And I think we need just more shit, like more stuff, more special, more, because some of this stuff has become a little bit mundane, just that we're so used to it happening in a certain way. And I think that's a lot of the feedback that we get for World Series is it's just something different. And I get tired of the something difference, because that's like JT's middle name, JT something different Hudson. But to your point about the challenges that exist with running a series is you've got to create continuity. You've got to create a format that you can rinse and repeat throughout the course of the year. But it's cool to have. I'm glad the Shakedown's coming back, man. Like I think that event has. There's still something, it is. Right? Like, I remember when you called me and early on, that name still has reverence in this space, I think. And I think the time of year is going to really help you, because when people think of Shakedown, they think of hoodies and stocking caps and that kind of crisp fall air. Like, that's what I think of is, you know, walking around the hallowed ground that was Old Bridge Township Raceway Park in New Jersey. In a hoodie, and everybody's there letting it all hang out, shooting for the records, people from different sanctions and series and that very rarely get together. That was the special nature of that whole deal. So I'm excited, man. Thanks for sharing the news with us. I was wondering if we'd get any of it out of you. You've been giving me the old never been done before thing for like 3 months now.
I've been
feeding
that line. I was like, you know what? Let's just put it out anyway. I mean,
well, and I'm saying to myself, I was literally, you texted me that the other day. No one's ever seen something. Yeah, no one's ever seen this done, and I'm like, what? Like what? And so I'm glad you. Yeah, but hey, man, I think it's cool.
I channeled my inner Tony Stewart and Donnie Schatz on this one. Okay.
Well, they clearly do it for a reason. I mean, I go to those events, and I go to, you know, not a ton of that stuff, but like a point of pride personally is that I try to go see a lot of different stuff. Yes. I try to take in a lot of different types of events on purpose, always trying to learn, head on a swivel, some idea we can steal, copy, borrow, modify, make our own.
Yep.
And, you know,
if we don't,
there's a lot of excitement in triple track racing right now. I mean, stock car racing, late model racing is doing well. Sprint car racing is doing well. Like
for sure.
New series, new this, new that, all the stuff's for big money. And the format has to contribute to it. I mean, I draw a lot of inspiration from the Chili Bowl in Tulsa.
I'm just going to say the Chili Bowl.
I mean, I know drag racers that don't go to a single, don't have any desire to go to stock car races, go to those type of events, that go to the Chili Bowl. Like, make it a point every year they go to that event. And that's our dream for the World Series of Pro Mod, to become one of these events that you can't miss it. It doesn't matter if you're a nitro guy, a door slam, a small tire guy, whatever. That's an event. Anybody who's anybody in drag racing is at that race, likely competing. And it's an exciting time, man. I do feel we've seen Pro Mod back on top. I'm glad to see Donald Long announcing new things and kind of getting shit stirred back up, because it did feel like there was a few years there where he was kind of laying back.
I thought he was
going to
retire all the time.
I did too.
I was kind of like, I didn't know how to take that.
He did. He kind of got a little quieter than we were used to, but I like our team, like here at DI, like we all believe the sport of drag racing is you need guys like him.
You need,
not everybody loves the way Donald does stuff. Like he's got a real, you know, it's his deal is well known, right? And he stirs things up and he's not afraid to call people out and he's not afraid to, you know, create controversy, but you need people like that. And I'm personally excited about it. I mean, like I said earlier, as soon as I saw his post on Facebook, I'm like, shit, now I got to pay $200,000. But it's like, I appreciate what he's doing and I'm excited for it. I mean, I'm more of a race guy. I'll be the first to admit
we are all fans of the sport and we are really bad about fanboying at times and going, man, why didn't I think of that?
I'm not convinced personally, and I could be wrong. It can be done. I believe anything can be done. I don't think anything's impossible, but I'm anxious to see what his response is to the Race for the Record part of it. Cause I mean, I saw you try that at the Shakedown and I don't know if it was time of year.
It's hard,
but it's hard to get, especially when these people are so programmed to go compete, right? Get themselves in a show and find a way to win. And I want to see racing. And this is drag racing meets land speed racing.
This is like doing something completely different that we've all talked about. You know, you talk about, hey, it's going to pay this much to win. Now it's like, it's going to pay this much to burn the scoreboard down. You're like, huh?
I don't know that I'm anxious to see. Like, I really am. I think there are some guys out there right now. I think maybe post-COVID, I don't know. Everybody's got different opinions on the economy, but I definitely think there are some guys out there right now that have the resources to build a no rules car, to build a super lightweight car. But that's somebody the thing. That's the concern. Someone's going to do it, no doubt. And somebody's, I'd say we're going to go see it. Several cars run in the 340s. I think that, but you do have to wonder, like, is how many guys are going to keep doing that? Like if a super rich team owner comes out and shows up at that deal late next year and runs 343, 345, which I've had a ton of different tuners and crew chiefs tell me that they believe that's an attainable thing. A mid 340. I've had a guy tell me that he thinks he can go low 340s. You have to wonder, will that inspire more people to try, or will it do what we were talking about earlier and kind of close the door on the possibility where people are like, shit, I don't have a country behind me. I don't have a gazillion dollars. I don't know.
Look how long that run of Frankie's has held for.
Yeah.
What?
And you're not talking about a super big budget team. You know what I mean? Like that's a guy. I mean, he made that run on borrowed tires, a borrowed blower belt,
probably a,
you know what I mean?
Wheelie bars.
Yeah. I mean, it's so who knows? Hey man, we need stuff going on. We need people. It's good for the racing economy.
The best part of the whole thing is somebody and the numerous somebodies are talking it and people are talking about drag racing. And that's the main thing.
Now, if it was just on a slick prep racetrack with big tires and bars, because I don't
know
think
a we'll guy that can make that happen. Just let me know whenever you're ready.
I don't know.
We did pretty solid.
I've had a dream of doing an event similar to that, but JT and I've talked about it. I've wanted to do, but I would do it. I think I would do it as knowing exactly who's coming. And I think I would pick, I think I would find a way to ensure a set group of people are coming to attempt the record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where I think if I'm, and this is why people get so mad about the invite only thing, but that's not done to exclude people. It's done to ensure the people that say they're coming are coming.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's because that's the thing that I think happens. And I get frustrated because I guarantee you, if you make any of these invite only things that we're putting on, if you make them open to anybody, all the people, like, you're going to have 20 people no show you. Yeah. Like it's just, I guarantee it. Like I, you don't have to look very far to find innumerable examples of where, you know, there's less participation, right? Because it's open to anybody. I mean,
think about it from the fan side. You know, why is NHRA successful? Because they know who's coming to race every weekend. They promote the people.
You know, John Force is coming.
You know, John Force and Steve Torrance are coming.
And that's
I don't
know that exists that's hard to accomplish. And I think if I'm Donald, I'm going, this race for the record deal is invite only, and these are the six guys that are going to get a shot at it this year, or the 10 guys, whatever the number is. I don't know what the number is, but because the way I wanted to do it was do it with a single person. Like, I had this notion of getting together with Mark Mickey to try to run 300 miles an hour in the quarter mile. And my thought was take his car, rent a track for a week, and do it more like Evel Knievel trying to jump the Snake River Canyon. Like, hey, Evel Knievel jumping Snake River Canyon was a international sensation. People attended it. It was all these things. And it wasn't 10 guys with home-built contraptions trying to jump Snake River Canyon. It was Evel Knievel was coming to do it, right? And it's, I think we could create something similar. Another one that comes to mind is like Scott Palmer.
Yeah.
You know, obviously his shit burst into flames here recently, but I talked to him and he's building another car. Going to do the Nitro deal again. And he wants, that's the type of thing that I think you could create a storyline around where you go, okay, this guy is coming in to try to accomplish this. And even if you don't accomplish it, it's still,
you still talk like about it.
It's a sellable attraction. Because I think he's going to have to, and I know that he posted that Frankie Taylor and Stevie Jackson are already committed. I would continue down that path. Yeah. Like, I would say, all right, we got Frankie Taylor committed. We got Stevie Jackson committed. Brandon Pez, you got to have him.
I think he's
notorious outlaw guy.
You know,
Bubba Stanton. Jason Scruggs has an outlaw, has a no rule. Jason Scruggs has got a pro extreme car right now. So there's some guys out there. But I think if you put together like, hey, here's the guys that are coming. This is the roster of guys that are coming. Because do you remember Jason Miller did this with his Home Run Derby?
Yes.
That it was cool. And I think there's a whole lot of people that their entire racing career is built on the back of like having the fastest stock suspension blue Mustang with a turbo four cylinder and Weld S71s on it. Right. Like everybody's looking for that little record, piece of history. Honest. Yeah. But you know, I mean, that's a whole thing it out is. Here. And if he's creating a place for that to come, I don't know, man, I can get on board that. I look at how much the top eight, the Drag Illustrated top eight, we actually did away with it for a little while. We just kind of quit. We took it out of the magazine. We didn't know if people really, and like it, our so inbox was melted revolt? Down. People going, yeah, man, yeah, people are like, dude, we got to have that back. That's got to be in the book. Yeah. And so we brought it back and it's just a perpetual reminder of how much those individual records and stats matter to folks. Honestly, we need more of that stuff in the sport, not less. It's so funny. I'm here for it.
We all say it all the time that, you know, people that are engulfed in the sport, like we are, you know, we sit out here and do a private test session and watch a pro mod go 365 at 205. And we're going solid lap.
Decent run.
That's a fast hot rod, y'all. And
oh, dude.
And we are the world's worst. I am the absolute world's worst person to go promote a race because it's like, oh, I had 360 pro mods out here last weekend just testing for during a bracket race. No big deal to me.
You get desensitized to it.
Yes.
You do.
It's so normal to us now that it's like, we just, oh, that one went 367. Neat.
Well, right. I mean, it's a real serious challenge to stay present with what is happening because the amount of fast cars that exist right now, like the really fast 360 eighth mile, 200 plus eighth mile capable cars, there are so many of them that they're almost in. I mean, there's hundreds of cars that fit that. And if you think about, I mean, that's insane.
It's crazy.
I mean, that's absolutely. That's like saying at your local golf course, JT, there's 200 guys that can drive the ball 400 yards. You know what I mean? It's like there's one guy at every club that can drive the ball, right? You know, or a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, we're kind of getting to the point now where like everywhere you look, you go to Piedmont and see 370, 360 door cars. You know what I mean? It's technology has taken this sport so far in terms of the on-track performance and how consistent they are. Like I think about, it would be impressive enough if a guy went 365 once a week, you know, a Hail Mary killer run. But now you got guys that run these cars, I mean, as well as a bracket racer would, you know what I mean? Where they're within 100th every run. It's like, it's total insanity.
Yep.
But we've got to all work on staying in awe of this.
Yes.
Because I really think that that's a problem that exists in our sport is that we see so much of this. That a little bit of the starstruck, like awe inspiring. And that's why I like challenge myself to stay a fan.
Yes.
You know, to stay, because it's like I go out to No Prep Kings on Saturday night and there's people standing around everywhere and the stands are full of people and these cars are sliding all over creation. And I like, it's so badass. Like I get excited just being in the environment around these people. And I think that's, you got to fight to keep it, because it's easy. You know what I mean? It's easy to get, especially someone as yourself that's doing a race every weekend at VMP and then traveling the country 8 times a year doing PDRA races. I mean, well, and I think Tyler, it's easy Tyler, to go, oh my God.
Tyler gives them a great racing surface as well. So, it makes these cars go down Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, one after another, and, you know, maybe not fighting it as much, you know, so it,
you know, it makes so it look,
it does. It makes it look a lot easier when they're on a good surface.
Yep. And it's, you don't want to say, oh, we need to take that away because it's safety. You know, I mean, these cars are flying. You mean you can't take that away, but you almost want to go, dang, like we have just, like we've almost made this cruise control for these people. And
I think that we're at a point right now where track prep is good. I think that
back
it's
been a little bit, it needed,
I do think we reeled it back.
And I was the world's like, hey, made a living traveling the world, spraying glue. Like, I'm probably the problem, but it needed to come back. It was so far gone to be a Band-Aid for everything that it was like, oh, this is not good. We're ruining this.
Well, you start, you know, an environment is developed quickly, and we oftentimes, like going back to that point we made earlier about like Lainey Wilson bringing bell bottoms back, like people get like that becomes that's the deal.
Yeah.
Like now everybody wears bell bottoms. It's back. And it happens because really fast. Everybody gets,
you know,
well, I mean, and that's the thing is like the radial stuff, the prep got so good that just became the expectation, and people, and I'm not everybody, but there was like a group of racers that like, if the car didn't make it down the track, like they weren't, it was the track's fault. It was always the track. It was never, we weren't too aggressive, or we don't have our suspension set up wrong, or we don't have weight percentages wrong. The track's junk. Yeah. Drag racing. That's not drag racing. Yeah. Like drag racing since its inception was like navigating whatever tricky conditions are out there. Who can navigate that stretch the best? And I do think that we kind of trended towards, I mean, 100% where the track was so good.
We band-aided it.
And that I think it was a little bit for all the do-it-yourselfers out there and all the guys that want to fight this and felt like the track was where they, I mean, I know tons of pro mod racers that, like you've mentioned about Ricky earlier, loved to race in July.
Yes.
They didn't like unloading the car and they didn't like everything else and sweating their asses off. But man, did it narrow the gap between the haves and the have-nots when the track's 140 degrees.
Don Garlitz told us that.
And it's all greasy.
I mean, he said he thought it went too far and it needed to come back. Because it needed to become, you know, it needed to become more of it. You can't just pour the power to it. You have to go out and you have to see what the conditions are. You have to see the condition of the track, and then you have to tune to that track. And that brings everybody. I guess that's when it's a glimmer of hope. Yeah,
it's a glimmer of hope.
And even if you don't have the best equipment or the latest greatest everything, you're still competitive if you're a good tuner.
Yep. Yeah. Our long lost co-host, Mike Carpenter's dad, Charles Carpenter, the godfather of
Mike, by the way. I don't know, man. I went over to the convenience store earlier and his picture was on the back of a milk carton. So that got me kind of worried.
Oh, God, but man.
He'll come back home.
You know what it reminds me? Well,
he'll come back home.
Good old dog. Yeah.
Well, Charles, Mike's dad, I mean, he made a living like being the guy that's going to make the trip. Car's going to go down the track, and he may not run. I mean, at his heyday, he may not be the 390 guy, but he's going to run 4.0 something every single time. And whenever the track goes away, he's going to run a 4.0 something.
And that's, you know, in all the guys that guy on the ladder.
I agree. And I think that the door, but you see guys like him. The door kind of closed on him, yes. You know, where he used to be able to lean on his racing prowess to narrow the gap between himself and the guy with the latest, greatest, state-of-the-art stuff. And I think what we've seen happen is as the tracks have gotten so good and the equipment has gotten equally good, it created an environment where, like, you kind of could buy the best shit and be in the hunt.
Yeah.
Right. And it negated some of the advantage that a real deal hardcore racer that had beat up and down the highways and byways of America match racing on Friday nights, it kind of negated some of his advantage. Right. Cause I mean,
it did.
And I'm glad to see it. What's happening is what is the word? It's that we have righted the ship, I think, yes. Is what's starting
not
to
a
happen.
Full
it's
reset, kind of, but we kind of like, we put a little boat, we put a little rear
spirit. Like, okay.
Man, it only took a glue shortage to get everybody back.
But that's one of those things where we were saying that on here. Hey, man, we needed that glue shortage, like, right? I mean, we needed the stuff to become hard to get because everybody was getting drunk on it. And it was quickly becoming a fix, too, where, I mean, I would see track operators and promoters make a bad situation worse. But just spraying more glue. Like I'd be like, oh no, don't spray anymore. No more glue.
Yeah, we're good.
And but that kind of became, like you said, the fix was spray it. And that it's not a sustainable thing. And I'm glad that the sport has kind of had this correction. No.
You know, from a business standpoint now, it's like now the cost is, you know, 200% up compared to what it was back then. So now it's
what do you guys
worse.
Spend on glue at PDRA a year, you think?
At PDRA or at VMP?
Yeah. At PDRA. Or do both.
Both combined, I'm thinking we were like 120 or 150,000 this year.
Wow.
Just dumb. Like
that's a lot of money.
I can tell you
every time, if you think about that.
Every time I run the
sprayer. More than I ate as a kid. You know, I mean that's a lot.
Exactly. It's like, holy crap. And the worst part
how much
like,
do you own Elmer's?
Yeah
bro,
they should make you
much.
A board member.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I tell people all the time, they, you know, people will ask, hey, you know, what's it cost to turn the lights on? What's it cost to do this? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, every time that sprayer goes down the racetrack, sprays wall to wall and goes to the quarter mile, that's $1,000. That's $1,000 in product that you just sprayed on the racetrack. And, you know, to most people you go, you know, that's just that's part of it. But when you do that four or five times a weekend, it's like,
yeah,
whoa, we got to sell more tickets. Like,
yeah,
no, there's no doubt, man. I mean, it really is a crazy thing to think about just the consumables that go into these things. I was going to ask you too, have you guys messed with your light system at VMP much more? Like I remember at the Musco LEDs and the dancing light thing. Like,
yep.
Have you guys, are you guys the only drag strip in the country that had that set up right now?
I think as of now, we're the only drag strip that has it.
Yeah.
I know there's a couple circle tracks that have it. But I think still we're the only drag strip, to my knowledge. I mean, there may be more, but
JC, we got to find a clip to post on our social. I think I've got a video.
I've got
Kyle,
a couple.
You should send it because people need to see it. Like
it's,
I just really love seeing stuff like that.
Well,
just anything that can be added to the production of a drag race, I'm a big fan.
And let's be honest, your biggest scare is that you have somebody that has seizures and you're like, oh crap. Like, I didn't plan that right. Oh shit. but like, it's, you know, we would use it for, okay, hey, the tractor's making the last pass. You've got 90 seconds. Hit play this 90 second clip. And it runs a 90 second deal. Well, it's a good filler to go roll into finals or you're going to go throw t-shirts out. There you go.
Have the lights doing a thing. Yeah,
have the lights doing the thing. So it's really unique and it's fun to use it at times. It's really fun when nobody knows it's coming because it's like, oh, this is great. Watch these people panic like we didn't pay the power bill this month. But
that's funny.
But it's such a
unique. Well, most track operators are scared shitless to turn their lights off.
Right.
For fear that they might not turn back on. Right. You know what I mean? It's like,
or the old ones that took
we don't even like anybody walking past that switch.
Yeah.
No, it's true. Like, I mean, I remember like at Eddyville back in the day when I was running that, you had to be like, it took a second. Like, you know what I mean? Getting all the lights turned on.
Thoroughly, Jack.
Yeah, man, it's going to take a minute to get them bad boys warmed
and
up.
Like, throwing some music on and put the dancing lights on and just, yeah.
So I'm not going to lie.
Dancing to them, huh?
I was, what I race would. Was it? It was one race we were parking and I didn't turn the lights on. Like, and usually I'm really good about turn on parking lot lights and stuff like that. And I was sitting there and I'm like, you know what? It's dark. This will be fun. So I walked up and hit the button and started playing music as loud as I could get it and did like a light show. There were people running all over the place that were nowhere near that they were supposed to be. And it was a blast.
That's awesome. Awesome.
But you gotta have. I want to get one of those. I mean, it's funny. We all talk as a team, like at PDRA or the racetrack or stuff like that. We all have to have fun with it too. Like I know you guys do as well with your side. You know, it's if we can't have fun on the event side, we're not going to make it fun on the for the racers as well. So if we can laugh with it, hey, that's what it's all about.
Hey guys, new hats just dropped. The OG members only collection is available now. Racers.club. Check it out. All items limited edition, extremely exclusive, and they are going fast. These new hats are super sick. I couldn't be happier with how they turned out. All the gear is turning out spectacular. High quality drag racing's ultra premium lifestyle brand. Again, you can join the movement by logging on to racers.club. Join a growing community of hardcore racers and fans that want to be a part of pushing this sport forward. So check out the new hat, racers.club.
I tell people all the time, that's why we have a strict zero tolerance, no asshole policy.
Fact.
You know, and I mean, that's like literally rule number one at Drag Illustrated, don't be an asshole. And you don't fit, right? And I tell people, I had someone hit me up the other day about, oh, I want so-and-so in this, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, dude, that guy is a jerk.
Yeah.
They're like, well, he's got a really fast car. Yeah, but he's pretty hard to deal
with. Well, you know? Well, like our conversation was the other day. That's going to be our new slogan for World Series of Pro Mod. Why didn't my guy get it in? No assholes allowed.
No assholes allowed, man. but it's like all this stuff is so hard. It's so expensive. It's so much work. I want to do it with people that want to be a part of it and want to have fun, because that's something I've learned from from the Bandamirs, that from Bill Bader Jr. And the list goes on, is that fun is paramount. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't having fun doing this, they're not going to keep doing it. Like, you got to find a way to make it fun from start to finish. And I say that all the time. Like, they made a quote card out of it. Kayla did here. I truly believe this. People don't remember what happened. They remember how you made them feel.
Yes.
Like they don't remember who qualified number one. They don't remember who, they may not even remember who won. They don't probably remember where they parked, whatever. All these things that become, that we all think is a really big deal, right? They're the biggest deals. None of that is important or will overshadow the fact that Betty at the gate was a bitch to them when they came in and made them feel like less than, or made them feel like they, you know, did something wrong. And you'll never that's the memory. That's the core memory that they now have, is that that gal was mean to them or whatever. And it's such a hard thing to police. It's such a hard thing, like from a management perspective, but it's all about your people.
It is.
And
you know, and that's most
of you got to have the right people, and you've got to have people that get it. People that want to be there.
I know the Franklins,
because if you don't want to be here, don't be.
I know the Franklins and Crossno is, I know you guys are big on it. If you didn't catch it, Monday, Bill Bader did an interview for the racing business, and he talks a lot about customer service and, you know, acting appropriately and, you know, basically the show,
doing things
the show. Yeah. Yep. And, if you didn't catch that, I think every person probably ought to go back and watch it. He's
100%.
He's a great.
Got to give a shout out to Jason Dukes, our host of the Racing Business. Awesome. Drag Illustrated is the Racing Business, man. He's done an incredible job with this. And if I, you know, I look back on all the projects that we've had a hand in at DI over the years, and there's always, if I had to pick, there's a common denominator amongst everything that has worked. And it's always been that it becomes someone's baby.
Yes.
Right. Like, and I preach that a lot. And I try to give everybody on our team like something that is theirs. Like JT has the party. Like, be there, no doubt.
Get your tickets.
The party doesn't happen.
Those are now
live. Yeah, get your tickets. Those are live. JT's got the link. He'll post them in the comments. But it's like the party's JT's baby. And I've made it clear, everything runs through JT on the party. He works with the club. He does all the bit. And I think that party is so badass because it's JT's baby. And if it was just this like group committee effort, we all contribute.
Right.
Absolutely. But it's gotta be someone's baby. And I think about like the podcast, the racing business, Jason's made that his baby. Jason and he works with our team. JT produces all the episodes, and you know, it's like, but that's, you got to have someone that's going to take ownership of it. I think about the most successful columns that we've ever had in Drag Illustrated magazine. Van Abernathy's On the Road column. He's taken ownership of it. Like, he's passionate about it. People know what it is. He spreads the gospel of this all the time. Tommy D'April, The Real Deal with Tommy D, like he's done an incredible job, but he's taken ownership.
He has.
Like he's really, he's proud of it. We never have to beat him up to get a column in. He's on top of it all the time. And I think that's kind of the magic of these things. And we tend to do that even at our events where it's like, all right, whose baby are our VIP guest? Whose baby is our sponsors? Who's handling this? Like we try, like typically at World Series of Promont, and this is something that I adopted from the Bandimere family, is we have like a liaison for each category. So we'll have a pro mod liaison, we'll have a pro stock liaison, we'll have a pro 10-5 liaison. And those are like point people where like, hey, most every question you have or most every need you have will be able to be met by them.
Yeah.
If not, they will communicate with one of us or whatever to solve it or to get the information. But having those, but then you have someone who has, okay, ProMod's my baby this weekend, and they're running around giving them the sheets and taking care of those guys this weekend. And it's not cheap, right? Because you got to pay that guy probably, you know, or gal. But I think it's those little details like that where there's a point person or somebody's, this is their project, this is their baby. That's typically here has been the common denominator with what things are successful and what aren't. Yeah, man. And people need to be invested.
Yes. Like, if you're not invested, you're not going to be bought in 100%. You don't have skin in the game, you're not going to be what you could.
Especially over the long term, because it's like year one, you're excited, right? You've never done this before. You're all fired up and you've got all that new energy that comes that is part of a new project. But year two,
as Tommy Franklin would say, new broom sweeps well.
Yeah, new broom sweeps well. And it's true. I mean, it's that new thing everybody's all excited about, but the real challenge becomes not even year two, because I used to joke year three and four, where it's now you've set a standard, right? Can you match that standard or exceed it?
Yep.
Right. And it becomes hard. And now it's a little bit more of a grind, right? Because that new broom has worn off a little bit. And that's really the challenge. And I feel like most of these events kind of, it's a 3-year deal where year one, you provide proof of concept. Year two, you demonstrate consistency that you can do it again. And then in year three is where you really start cooking with gas. Yep. You know what I mean? That's when you're like, okay, we're here. Now we have to evolve. Right. So we've made it to this point, this landmark moment where year three, now you have to find ways to evolve or grow or expand or improve the experience in a variety of different ways. But
I've always said, can get to year five, if you can do it the right way and get to year five, you can do whatever you want to do at that point.
I think there's some real truth to that, man. I think there really is. Well, Tyler, dude, I mean, we've had you on here for an hour and a half.
We always do this. We always say it's going to be like 45 minutes, and then it's
You both hate talking so much, you know.
Shut up, JT. Yeah, JT. No one in the history of the West Buck Show do I have more trouble talking over than Tyler.
Yes.
You know, because he'll fight for it. He'll keep fighting. They'd be like, damn it, dude. No, I'm just joking.
Well, seriously. You have to be quick when Wes is talking. You got to jump in there. But then when you jump in there, then you jump in so fast, then you like kind of stutter because you don't.
You're like all locked up. It's like, man, I feel like if you're in the MSD box whenever you jump in on Wes. It's like,
if you give me a stutter, I'm sliding in. You know what I mean? Like, if you stumble on a word, I see that as door wide open. Yep. Here's my spot.
He stopped. I'm in.
Well, Tyler, seriously, man, thank you for being a part of this. We're obviously huge fans of everything you do with the PDRA, and so proud of you guys and happy for you. Excited about this new schedule. Looks like we're gonna have to add Bristol to our travel plans in 2024, and I'm looking forward genuinely to all the other news at the PRI show coming up. It's kind of cool. We've made a little bit of a tradition, the PDRA gang and the Drag Illustrated crew, to make all sorts of announcements at the PRI show. So I'm looking forward to your press conference, man.
Be a good time.
Have you guys set a date yet? Friday? Or are you going
to
do Saturday?
We're trying to do Friday. So
Friday.
That is the plan as of now. But
keep us posted, man.
We will do it. It's always an honor. Thanks for the time as always. Always glad to come on with you guys. Hate to miss Mike, man. I mean,
I know, dude. I'm getting a little bit worried about him.
I think he's doing it.
I really am, man. You know what this reminds me of?
Like you broke up with us. It's kind of weird.
This is how print week used to go. Like, so back in the, back in the beginning, like whenever we would be uploading an issue of the magazine, no, you couldn't get a hold of anybody. We were all in the foxhole grinding, and that's what's happening right now. It was print week last week, trying to get ready for PRI. We got all these projects up in the air, and typically Mike goes pretty much MIA, radio silent during print week. And huge shout out to the whole DI team, because the hardest issue we do every year is the 30 under 30 issue.
It's gotta be.
That's 30. Same here, man. And it is an issue of the magazine that I am still to this day blown away with how much people care. But I mean, that's 30 individual interviews that have to be scheduled, 30 individual interviews that have to actually happen. Then once they happen, you've got to get them transcribed or whatever the case is. Then you've got to craft a story. Then you've got to source photos. It's without question the most challenging issue we do every year.
I've offered to help write, but you know, nobody will let me. So.
I will. Well, just let me know when you want in next time. I'm going to pick a story up, but actually it's going to be JT.
Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic. The wordsmith himself.
Yes. Marvelous program. But
how many times can you fit the F word into a paragraph?
There's a couple in there that I could probably. Never mind. I'm not going to start there.
We appreciate you, Tyler, and we'll see you guys next time. All right.
Looking forward to Indy. We'll see y'all then.